And I will go back.
Here now. No, hold on. You stay there.
Okay.
This is Sheila Sprumoli you're seeing on the screen. This is our last presentation in series 4 of the Monday Live series, which for the years 2018 to 2019, I'm told, was an excellent year, really great presentations, and will be stored in perpetuity on the Teachable Classroom for access, especially if you're an active student, and were an active student at that time, you always have access to those talks. And we're hoping that the year to come, Series 5, which all active students will automatically be migrated into if you started at a certain time in 2018, so that you get a full year of presentations, that will be equally amazing, and we're going to see a repeat of some of our most popular speakers, and we're going to continue at this stage going through the module stage, and then instead of creating safety, we will have a semantics series for the Monday Live 4, and for Monday, as we have been doing on the first Monday of the month, we'll have the Join the Conversation. And this has been an unusual month in that we've had a month of Join the Conversations, and they've all been presented by PPNE graduates, and showing you just the amount of creativity. Donna was on there, and Ann Matthews. And Sheila Sprumoli has agreed to step in today and explain to us this marvelous creative process that she's come up with related to the medieval Chart Labyrinth. So Sheila, just correct me if I'm wrong, but Sheila's speaking to us from Ohio today. She met Jaap van der Waal, and that kind of, you know, the famous Jaap van der Waal, and that kind of induced her to return to college in her 60s, and ultimately it led her to the PPNE certificate program in the first year that it was offered. So she is one of the first crew of graduates in 2014, but she brought to PPNE a lifetime career as a nurse and a trained doula for countless births and deliveries, and her experience in that area is just like poetry to listen to. I say she blends her experiences and insights from this world, the world of live births, with those of being an artist and creating artwork and running art workshops. She's also a certified labyrinth facilitator. She also has training in biodynamic sacrocranial therapy. She's also been a spiritual director and pursued that. And in recent years is a graduate of the Lake Erie Institute Ecotherapy Program, which is like, I always call it mindfulness in nature. And I can say with total confidence that no one I know as an art historian, so I know a lot of people who have worked in Chartres, but nobody I know has taken apart the labyrinth quite the way that Sheila has. And she's taken it apart to put it together to relate to these components of embryonic development that also, of course, are mirrored in us as adults and in our imprints. So, saying no more than that, I leave it to Sheila. She's going to introduce us to the puzzle at first, and then we'll go into a PowerPoint. And Sheila, would you like to have interaction as people come up with questions, or would you like me to relay chat questions to you?
As you know, the presentation that I've chosen is going to be a full screen, which means I don't have access to my notes. And so I'm thinking, if it's a burning question, ask it. Otherwise, hold it until the end, because I do want feedback until the end. But if it's something that is keeping you from holding the kite string, like I like to say, or you need a pause, you can do that privately at any time. My process today will be to invite all of you, and hopefully look all of you in the eyes, even if you're not on screen, to tell you that this is not a typical approach to pre and perinatal education, but I think I am reaching audiences beyond childbearing and still to people who have the potential to heal from their birth narratives, like the pre and perinatal material did for me. So I am going to begin by showing you the busyness of the pieces because they fit into this. They fit into this board, and they are comprised of four pieces. This is the first piece. These are laser cut out of wood. This is the second piece.
Back it up a little. Yeah.
Better?
Yeah.
Should I get my face out of it so you can see better?
No, leave your face in it.
Okay. This is the third piece of the puzzle. If some of you might be familiar with the Chartres-style 11th circuit labyrinth, these are all derived directly from that medieval labyrinth. This is the third one, and this is the fourth pattern. So just as we pause at the beginning of any labyrinth walk, before we enter, think to yourself, which of these patterns, or this may be a little bit hard to see, but this is the spiral. Can you see this?
Mm-hmm.
Can you see this spiral? This is the spiral path that comes when you cut one of these patterns, when you cut one of these labyrinths. Every one of these four templates that I showed you are common to every one of us. We all have to go through these developmental performance wayfinding behaviors to come into form. But the path, this path that collapses and expands, is unique to every one of us. None of it is the same. It is the biology that is our biography that can never be duplicated, like Van der Waal says. I think I'm ready, if everybody else is, to go to the private screen or the full screen. So I'm going to click on share, and I'm going to click on my PowerPoint.
And there you are.
There I am. Oh, how do you like this? I am going to close my gallery. I don't know if it's in your way. Can you see it? Can you see the full screen without the gallery?
I can.
Okay, then I'll leave it there.
Yeah.
So, of course, my phone's ringing, but I'm not going to answer it. This is going to be the story of my certification journey. I borrow slides from it, but I've modified them. And by way of doing that, I will also introduce the Chartres for Peace Labyrinth. A real teacher has been and still is the embryo, who is incidentally the only teacher who is always right. That's Victor Hamburg. He was an embryologist, and I believe he taught both Van der Waal and Brian Freeman, who wrote Blechschmidt's book, translated Blechschmidt's book on dynamic morphology. Can it be true that patterns in our prenatal experience serve as a kind of template for patterns later forming the tissues of our complex postnatal life behavior? I'm using the term behavior because Van der Waal says that the embryo is expressing something by its gestures and its growth movements. We're going to be exploring what that might mean. This is a picture of my two-year-old grandchild last Mother's Day. He took the labyrinth piece because they're in pocket-sized version also. And you can see by his face that he's looking at it. And being a pre and perinatal psychology educator, I cannot know what I know, and yet I still try not to project on what's going on to people, because it's very difficult, especially staying in my lane as a pre and perinatal educator, to say this is causal to that. When we visualize symbols, they can have profound transformative effects because they connect us with regions of our being which are completely unavailable to our analytical mind. So this baby looks like he's analyzing something. But the symbols are also train us to understand directly, a deeper kind of understanding, which awakens intuition and that precognitive level of consciousness that I believe is prenatal. A symbol can be a true reservoir of revelation. So this is the back of that panel that I showed you, the container, and you can see the four patterns here: conception, implantation, cardiogenesis, and embodiment. Think back again, maybe to, as we paused at the beginning, what pattern were you most attracted to? Or maybe you were attracted to the spiral. The embodiment skills as spiritual formation behaviors. In the training, I learned embodiment skills. In biodynamic cranial sacral practice, I actually experienced embodiment skills. I took my experience one meditation during my biodynamic cranial sacral training to understand that the compressive, all around compressive feelings that I was having during meditation, that I could stay with that process and it would resolve itself through its own healing process. When I came out of that globally compressed experience during meditation, I said to myself, that felt like I was in a womb during a labor contraction. And I am not supposed to be at the bedside of people anymore giving birth. I'm supposed to birth myself into the second half of my life. That's how I started applying my senses, my embodied experiences, to try to figure out what was going on psycho-spiritually with me. This was pretty much toward the end of my midlife crisis period. So these templates at the left, the first one is what van der Waal calls the preconception attraction complex. When the egg and the sperm come together, their polarity, they're so polar in their characteristics, but they belong together. They negotiate for hours. Is there going to be a conception? Isn't there going to be a conception? The lab workers know when the whole complex with thousands of sperm on the outside of the egg, with their tails starting to turn and curve because they're flagellating, trying to be sperm, the whole complex starts rotating counterclockwise. That's the preconception process. That twirling or whirling forms constellations, galaxies, tornadoes, weather patterns, embryos. It's a universal pattern. And during the actual joining and fusing of the egg and the sperm, van der Waal says we fall apart into ourselves. So that first behavior or movement of embryonic development is centripetal. We move in and fall apart into ourselves. The second one is implantation. That's centrifugal. We reach out to root into the womb lining. The third one is cardiogenesis. Again, if we only stay out there, there's danger of becoming what van der Waal calls a wind egg. Only the extra embryonic material form on a wind egg. And in the PPNE program, you have to show up. If you don't do your own work, if you don't get your experiences out of your head and embodied, you're going to be a wind egg, like a blowhard, you might say. So you have to show up. Van der Waal says this gesture of coming back toward your own central body is the heart, forms the heart, and it's your heart that brings you here to this planet. Embodiment is the third one. It begins with the delamination, where two-layer discs. The third layer disc starts forming us into a three-dimensional body. That, again, is centrifugal. We have to build this body wall around us by rotating 180 degrees and turning ourselves inside out, which is recapitulated. All of these are recapitulated on the psycho-spiritual level later. I'm going to tell the story through some of the story through my slides from the first presentation that I did for APA in 2015. And narrative currency is meaning. It's not truth. So I'm not an embryologist. I do not use case studies. I use story to get to the truth of the situation. I'm using this particular image, which is an old cast model from life that they had in the childbirth education old folders in the 60s, for example. And if you look at the outer circle, you can see the layers of the muscular parts of the womb. For me, that meant, or that suggested in my artist's mind, labyrinth, the concentric circles of a labyrinth. That's what started me thinking that the prenate is doing a sort of like a prenatal pilgrimage into this world. And of course, you can see the cord there too. There's the Theseus in the myth of the labyrinth was given a thread by Ariadne to lead him in and back out of the labyrinth safely. And of course, the vaginal of the cervical opening here that is not defined is the entrance. So again, we're gonna be talking about material that gets to the truth. It may not be our own story, but it may be activating. So at any point, you can pause in this journey. And again, as we enter, take a pause. Are you with me? Okay. This is where we're going to be entering. My end journey, this image is from last month. I was in France. I was actually standing in the Chartres Cathedral. If you can see where I'm standing, right in the center where those six petals are around, how far it is to this arrow up at the top of that image on the left. What I'm trying to look at is in the center, at the very top of the lancet window above the high altar. I wanted to see if it was possible for the pilgrims at that time to be able to see this image, which is in black and white on the right as a detail. But it is called the Seat of Wisdom, one of many seats of wisdom in the church and the cathedral. But this particular one had meaning for me because I was putting this idea together at midlife. And when you walk in the cathedral, you're walking in at the west wall where the sun goes down, but where this image is, and when you arrive at the center of the labyrinth, you're facing east, which is where the sun comes up, or new beginnings. But they had an old-faced Mary and Christ right above that in that place of honor. And what might that mean? So I explore the idea of what an embryo adult was. Now, an embryo adult for me meant somebody who consciously applies the wisdom of the wayfinding behavior of coming into form to their adult spiritual formation. That image, for me, in my artist's interpretation, the Christ is called a homunculus. And interestingly enough, the embryo used to be understood as a little man or homunculus in full form before they understood how development happened. He's holding a circle. When I've tried to find out about what that meant from an art historian standpoint, no one understood or gave me an answer that made me think that they knew, conclusively that that's what it was. I'm interpreting that as it's holding the placenta. This comes out of Francis Mott's work on prenatal mythology. And he said that some Aboriginal tribes actually carried around these red discs with them. So for me, he's holding his placenta to stay connected to the larger matrix that becomes the world when you reconceive yourself as an embryo adult. The image on the right says that this does not have to be about Catholicism or even religion. It's about spirituality or making meaning in what you're finding value in. And for me, I had to reconceive myself like this monk does with my own spirit embryo inside of me. The spirit embryo in the alchemical tradition is someone who will never lie to you, the parent that will never lie to you, Jung's idea of the self. It's the higher, it's bringing the what we did as embryo into psycho-spiritual development to form ourselves as spirit embryos. Is everybody okay out there? Okay. Each succeeding age formulates its characteristic concerns, and each era presents different philosophical stance, but each one exists like an embryo waiting for its own time to be born in the womb of the present preceding age. With the move away from myth, the labyrinth is understood to exist within the mind of the individual. Here we are now with the first slide that I used from my 2015 presentation. We're looking at the template of the Shark Cathedral that for me represents the preconception or reconception attraction complex and conception. In Dorothy's story, which is common to everybody, she's going through a period of transition in adolescence. And we know that our beginnings get recapitulated during different transitions. She's holding onto the dog, and in toto, or toto is the name of the dog, in toto means she's holding onto her wholeness still, even though this whirlwind, like the conceptus turns, you have to find yourself in the eye of the storm. I needed to do that in PPN training because, and in biodynamic craniocerebral training, anytime my worldview is challenged or my conception of myself is challenged, it often is heralded by this counterclockwise whirlwind of emotional feelings or confusion, etc. So we turn. Wow. One example of this chaos that precedes or heralds the potential for change is this sand painting. This sand painting I did when I was trying to figure out how to write a thesis. They gave you one page note. There was no coursework. I had to design my own coursework. I went to Goddard College in Vermont. And I just showed up in my mentor's office. She had a sand tray, and I started poking into the sand and squiggly lines, and my hand is in there, my phone fell in there. I mean, it was all just crazy chaos. But I was trying to do this self-organizing that the embryo does. And I knew that the embryo does this, so I was trying to do this, get the feeling of what it felt like to find my own midline by slowing down, by really regulating myself. But all important emotional states from which we suffer are collected in different creation myths. And this, I'm sorry, but this is another example of chaos. When I was discovering the Shark for Peace Labyrinth pieces, I couldn't make sense of it. So I printed out a piece, the labyrinth pattern on a piece of paper, and I took a scissors and I cut the path. And as I cut the path, these patterns down at the lower left of this image fell out in the order that I learned the embryonic developmental crisis from Van der Waal: conception, implantation, forming a heart, and forming a body. So you have to go through these periods of being confused and chaos and messy to get to the self-organizing and emergent properties of open systems, of open living systems, that open living systems do. Implantation, again, like I told you before, is a reaching out to the environment. So it's about establishing boundaries. It's about negotiating boundaries. It's about differentiating, this is mine, this isn't mine. I remember when I was writing my thesis, I went into a period of heavy, heavy sadness. And I realized that it was my grandmother's sadness. There had been, she had lost her mother when she was 3 months old. And I'm learning this about, ancestral patterns. And I'm thinking, I have to differentiate from this because this is not my grief. Yes, honor it, do my own healing and heal the caravan as I carry the process forward. But it wasn't my grief. It was my grandmother's. So implantation, let's see here, there we go. You have to fall into the womb lining, but you have to maintain boundaries. So the work of implanting into the learning community, I had the modules, I had embodiment skills, I had the Facebook group, I had mentoring work, I had student community, and I had extra curricular PPNE sessions with my mentor. Very important. I had to do my own work, I had to ask for help, and I had to stay in my lane. In other words, I had to remind myself that I was not a pre and perinatal psychology therapist. Asking for help for me meant working through trauma and bereavement, like I told you before, with my grandmother's grief. And as I looked at this model that I found in a book called Grief, All You Need to Know, I Learned at Birth by Erland, she shows a model of response to trauma and bereavement. And I thought by watching the undulating pattern here that it was sort of like a labyrinth pattern. You walk and then you turn and you walk and you turn and there's peaks and valleys. Cardiogenesis is the next developmental crisis. And it has to do with the amniotic sac being behind you, the yolk sac being in front of you, those two layers are together, and then in between arises tissues, cells that both connect and give you space so that the inside body can eventually, so that there's flow can go around the amniotic sac and around the yolk sac, and where they touch, in this limiting confined space is where the heart forms. So your heart comes in to formation where fluid currents converge from two different places. In other words, the amniotic sac, the outside world and your inside world. When your outside world and inside world meet and form, you have the potential of reforming your heart. How you're going to love, how you're going to allow yourself to be in the world in a loving way, and really what love is. Let's move this a little bit so that I can read this. It is, grief can be the garden of compassion if you keep your heart open through everything. Your pain can become your greatest ally in your life's search for love and wisdom. Embodiment is the next one. And I'm going to put this on it. Here we go. We have to turn and rotate 180 degrees and turn ourselves inside out during this stage. The neural tube, which was represented by the scarecrow, the heart by the tin man, and the gut by the lion, are all with us from the very beginning. They spent their whole trip in the Wizard of Oz trying to get those things or meet those needs. We come in with it. And process that you go through, on the left is the placenta, and on the top is the amniotic sac. The bottom, the yellow, is the yolk sac. Through this whole forming and turning and rotating 180 degrees, and it's so involved. I'm sorry I'm not giving it the respect that it needs. But my point here is that the wisdom is an ontological, or it's a way of being conditioned. There is a profound difference between knowing about wisdom and being wise, for being wise is a way of being, is a condition of being that is in us from our embryonic period. Why does one educate if not to put one's pieces together? From the moment we enter school or church, education chops us into pieces. It teaches us to divorce soul from body and mind from heart. There's a very important part of this heart template, which is the six petals around the very center of the labyrinth, which I was standing in some at the beginning of the a slide in the beginning of the presentation. These, for me, because I was studying pre and perinatal psychology at the same time I was studying spiritual direction, and I was in a waiting to walk a big chemist labyrinth at the top of a monastery in Canada. And I looked at those petals and I said, those are the cardinal movements of birth: descent, flexion, engagement, internal rotation, restitution, and birth. So I thought, that makes sense, because those were the same stages that Erland, in her book, All I Need to Know About Grief I Learned at Birth, was how she made sense of the loss of her son. She didn't use Kubler-Ross's stages. She had to identify them, because she's a nurse midwife, with the stages of giving birth. So this descent has to do with what we do psycho-spiritually. Flexion, engagement, internal rotation, restitution, and rebirth are all psycho-spiritual dynamics that can be related to the movements of birth that the embryo, that the prenate goes through in order to be born. Is everyone okay? Yeah? Okay. The dangerous poppy field effect. So, you know, I knew all this stuff as a pre and perinatal student. And the danger is that you don't get lulled back into sleep again, like the four of them did on their way to Oz in the poppy field. This is from Rumi. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the door sill, where the two worlds touch. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. Carl Jung proposed that we carry within us unconscious images and myths that arise from our biological past, that our ancient memories have roots in our biological nature. He believed that myths are inherited memories of the race that embody evolutionary processes and past experiences, and that precognitive memories of these stories are carried within us, and that we have access to this collective unconscious stash of sacred signs and symbols. Jung believed we are all born with an extensive foreknowledge and memory of the world. That to me brings together deep depth psychology, which was his baby, and birth psychology, and even transpersonal psychology. I know that Jean Rhodes went and presented at the transpersonal conference a couple of years ago in Hungary, trying to bring these disciplines together. Which way is the way back to Kansas? I can't go the way I came. So of course, on this labyrinth path, you're always intuiting the way forward. What is the next step? And you cannot get lost in a labyrinth. Mazes are made to deliberately confuse you. They're full of dead ends. But if you put one foot in front of the other, following that walking reflex that every prenate comes into the world with, you'll get to the middle and you'll get back out again. Okay, so pause and think of the word transformation. Where in this talk have we maybe done what the historian of religion called the regression back to the womb? It was a rite of passage in many, many early ancient cultures, where you literally went back to the womb to learn, much the same way that you do in pre and perinatal psychology education. I was thrilled when I found this image because it was in a fetal MRI journal. But you can see in the first one on the left, upper left, that the prenate is what they call pointing to the umbilicus, the umbilical cord. They said this, they're pointing to the umbilical cord. This was about the importance of the movements of the child. The second one to the next one is reaching toward it. The lower left is open hand, you can see it, and then it's holding the cord. For me, this preborn is like Theseus in the labyrinth. If you can get your prenatal narrative right, the first chapters of your spiritual autobiography, the rest of it falls into place. Is the labyrinth a teaching tool? It's more than being resilient. Resilience resists shock and stays the same. The antifragile gets better. Antifragility allows us to deal with the unknown, to do things without understanding them, and to do them well. We are largely better at doing than we are thinking, thanks to antifragility. A lot of the people and the children developmental talk about resilience. But during training, Kate introduced Taleb's work on antifragility. And it seems to me that since the embryo does all these things, it resolves all these developmental crises organically, that it models behavior that does not depend on the mind to the brain to think things out, because all of these stages are organically resolved before there's a functioning cognitive brain. This is a picture of a woman whose story I read in the Veriditas Labyrinth newsletter. She said, "The first thing I noticed about the labyrinth is it's coming up around me, and that that's what it's about in my world. It's about waking up your senses at a time when you can set everything behind you just for a little bit and let yourself be very present in some kind of setting that just wakes us up, wakes your senses up. The labyrinth is absolutely a surefire at letting people be present. My question here is, could this labyrinth tool be used as a teaching tool for pre and perinatal students to sort of, or maybe for mentors to use with their students to sort of anticipate or gauge their progress or give them a way in and a way out of the process, help them do a loop of completion or something. This particular woman had a description of the labyrinth and it, where she said the whole thing became, and this was her first experience of it. She couldn't figure out why people were so excited about it. She had been in some sort of particular crisis, which often will catapult you into this change in worldview perspective. Or your loss of identity or a grief process or some big trauma in your life often gets you on to ask that question, what's this all about? What's this all about, Alfie question. This particular woman had some crisis that made her go into the labyrinth. She ended up having an experience that was three-dimensional and the lines of the labyrinth actually came up around her and she was moving in it. She had to bend down to get through it. And I'm in my pre and perinatal informed head, I'm thinking, I'm wondering if this woman actually had a pre-birth experience or a birth experience stepping into the womb. So I tracked her down and I asked permission if I could ask her some questions. And from what she told me, she was born under anesthesia, and she had a positive experience of being in this, but this whole thing was sort of like psychedelic and everything was moving on around her. And I'm thinking, again, I'm staying in my lane as a pre and perinatal educator. I cannot say, and I don't think a therapist could say conclusively that this was causal or a birth experience was causal to her experience of the labyrinth. But the two things go together, and she had she experienced the labyrinth as a way of having this experience that I connected to birth psychology. Can the labyrinth help us with the cord, the baby holding the cord, and the way our prenatal embodied experiences inform our myths? Can it be a teaching tool? So that was the bit, what I had started with. What I'm doing now with my labyrinth work, after having been to the cathedral, is the arrow in the image on the left is of the Romanesque part of the cathedral. To my knowledge, no one had ever told me that there was a Sheila Nagig or a birthing image on the cathedral. On the right is a close-up of it. It is it's the out of the tumbler tradition or the jester tradition. They're like acrobats, but if you look at the image that I've put in the center, this is the image of a Sheila Nagig. It's a birthing image. I can use the whole cathedral to extend my understanding now of birth. The whole cathedral is about birth, coming into form, waiting for the Christic, for the Christ. That's what we're doing for me, evolutionary now, is how are we going to transform the culture? And I think from a pre and perinatal psychology educator's perspective, that we do it by changing birth. So comments and questions. Could the Chart for Peace Labyrinth be useful as a transformative learning tool for mentors and PPN students? for other birth professionals? And might the Shard for Peace Lab be used be contraindicated? When wouldn't you want to use it? That's the end of my presentation. I'm going to go stop sharing now so I can go back to face-to-face. Okay. Was that at all, did that at all make sense to anybody out there? And it's okay if it didn't, because this is my journey, but I'm curious as to know what it was like for other people going through the training. And did they find themselves in this labyrinth of, oh my God, this is big stuff we're working on. Did they stay in their own lane? Did they do their own work? You know, did they ask for help?
I'm just going to remind you to unmute your microphone. I had tried to unmute you all, but somebody's doing dishes or something. So unmute your own microphone in the left-hand corner, bottom corner, when you want to speak.
Hey, Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
Sheila, I am so impressed. I have been to Chartres. I love the cathedral. I love the imagery. And I think you have found some really new, fresh, and inspired ways to interpret what they're saying.
Yes.
I am on a spiritual journey. Absolutely. I know that we have to do our own work. If we're going to be healers, teachers, guides, mentors for anybody, we cannot take them further than we have been. And therefore, it's imperative. And also, we get triggered all the time if we're not doing our own work. Yeah. So I'm finding this really refreshing. And I have done a little work in this realm, not as thoroughly as you have in this particular interpretation of the labyrinth. I think it's just brilliant. I also see the labyrinth as working on probably multiple levels, but the two that I see are how wonderfully you've brought it back to how we incarnate, how we come into being, how we can use it as a stepping stone to transformation, coming into our adulthood through the same process. Mm-hmm. And also, to me, it's an ascension process, that as we go in, we enter the labyrinth and we literally, it looks so much like we're stepping into the center of our own brains, to the pineal, to the flowering of our Christ consciousness, that we have these overlapping images. And to answer your question about can this be used as a tool, I would say absolutely, Sheila. I think it's magnificent. And it would just be adapted to the individual that you're working with. Where are they in their process and what makes sense to them? Mm-hmm. Some of the, you know, the Sheila Nagig, you know, different kinds of expressions could be confusing. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, when you're working with symbol, when you're working with signs and symbols, you are connecting to a deeper level of mind, mm-hmm. that is so meaningful. And truly, I think it takes us back to our own innate wisdom, so that different people will get different value. But I don't think it cannot have value. I think it will. And I'm really proud of you. Have you printed anything? Do you have an article? Do you have a book?
I'm bringing this to this group because I first of all need to know, you know, whether I'm a wind egg out there someplace.
I don't think so.
This could be a legitimate teaching tool. And if it can, if I'm getting feedback that yes, this can be, then I need help. Ask for help, you know, in putting it together. Because I am more of an artist than I'd like to be in this regard. I can think of all these things, but putting it in linear booklet form is a challenge for me.
Well, I think that that kind of help is definitely available for you. It is truly your artist's inspiration, I think, that is of most value. And I encourage you to publish something. I am really jazzed. I think it's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you.
I too, Sheila, I'm just so impressed and excited about what you had to offer. I've always been drawn to the labyrinth and have used with it in my occupational therapy work with children in different ways and in my own personal development over the years. I'm just remembering I did a retreat where we walked a labyrinth out in a farm field. And as we were walking in, the opening was facing east, but as people walked in, they lined up on the east side on the edge of the labyrinth. But there were four horses in the field with us, and each horse stood at each corner of the labyrinth. I mean, it was just so powerful. They were holding space in just this amazing, amazing way. I don't know. I have so many thoughts going through my head. I'm so excited with what you all presented. And one thing I just really want to say, this whole, I don't remember your words. Coming into the second half of your life, as I'm in this period for myself, and I just finished the pre and perinatal training this past June, which was fabulous. And Susan was my mentor, and we had a fabulous support structure as a student in PPNE. And yes, I think this labyrinth has a place there too. But the point that I want to make is I'm in this second half of life. I've been studying with a meditation program called I Am Heart University. And they use the Chart Labyrinth as the path to self-realization. So it's I was just so excited to hear that you are using it as a path into this world. And at the same time, I'm using it to study my own path into psycho-spiritual self-realization. So it's just, it's been amazingly powerful. And I don't know what all of this is for me yet, but I'm just so grateful for what you shared. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna. One comment about horses, they found kangaroos in the center of labyrinths. Animals are attracted to it. It is like a womb environment. It's an organizing field. It's a container for self-organization.
Yes, thank you.
I'm curious to know. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm curious to know if anybody was the question about when you would not use this as a tool, if it were a tool, when it wouldn't be appropriate to use it as a tool. Joy, are you trying to say something? No. She's got her speaker. There you go. Still can't hear her. Karen, I think Joy is trying to speak, but I can't hear her.
Can you hear me?
Yes, turn your volume up.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes.
It's slight, but yeah.
Okay, let me find my earphone, okay? I'll find my earphone. Somebody can go ahead.
Okay. Anybody else? It's interesting to me because it's one of the, what seems to trigger people generally in the labyrinth experience is the first surprise you have when you try it the first time, and it keeps taking you out to the edge rather than towards the middle. And being pragmatic Americans, we're like, take me to the middle. I just want to go to the middle, man. So the patience that it takes to walk a full-size labyrinth, at least 45 minutes, is, I often see people just walk out of it if they're not in the spirit of it, because it's like, oh, I don't have time for this. But on the other hand, if you do approach it with a meditative mood and patience, of course you're rewarded, and you regulate. You're regulating your ANS, right? So as an adult, I think it's an amazing thing. I know when they established the first large scale one at Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, people would spend their lunch hours walking the labyrinth and then go back to their high rise and do their crazy work.
This this expansion and contraction is the, what the womb does through the whole pregnancy. It squeezes and then lets you expand, and squeezes and lets you expand. So that's, that for me, it makes sense that you would do the same thing psycho-spiritually. In fact, in a restricted space, the rootstock connected embryo oscillates back and forth like this, as if walking a pilgrimage in place in the uterus, because there's not, it's still connected to the rootstock so much. Mm. That's before you do that 180 degree turn that brings your umbilical cord to your navel, because it was behind you, and gives you some distance and retrospection of, oh, this is where I came from. And then that's recapitulated when at birth, when you're born connected, you get to flip over, you do that whole spiral and coming in, this whole spiral pattern is also in the birth, kind of movements of birth, you spiral to come in. And
so I would ask you, when you work with the spiral component, mm-hmm. that you showed your grandson playing with,
yeah.
I would imagine some people might respond to that as, this is chaos and I'm hanging out in the middle of space and what's going on?
Yeah, I never got that. I just found a laser cutter in March, so this hasn't been out in the world yet. And I'm thinking that the most response is people love that as a mobile to hang in their room. And for me, I did not get that upside down. That's where a mentor might catch in a response, that if they were given that response by a student, what might need to be explored here or contained in this process if my student is having this response. Again, it's not therapy, but it might be a guide to get them to a pre and perinatal psychology therapist for work that might need to be done, so that they can bring their work out into the world with boundaries, differentiating what's mine and what isn't mine, and be really effective teachers.
So I just unmuted Joy. Joy, did you want to say something? We're coming towards the top of the hour.
Yes, I get my earphone. Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
So actually, I had a dream about labyrinths a couple of days ago. So because I'm studying transpersonal psychology now, I think it's kind of reminded me about spiritual rebirths. Sorry, I'm learning English. So I have two questions. Can you more clear about the difference about four layers? Because I'm not really clear about the four layers of the libraries. What's the difference? And I also want to know, I think it's really, really awesome for a tool to study the birth psychology, but I want to know how to relate it more with our real life.
So the four separate patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. These patterns fell out of the labyrinth when I cut it, when I printed on a piece of paper, and because I had studied Van der Waal, I said to myself, those are conception. I mean, they actually look like it. Conception. Mm-hmm. Implantation, mother-child dyad. The heart of the labyrinth is cardiogenesis.
Mm.
Then embodying is bringing it all around you, getting an inside and an outside body. This, I think, Joy, you're touching on, you know, how do you put this? How do you apply this? How do you, make it so that it's understandable without taking an embryology class? I'm not an embryologist. So again, I bring this back to you. How can this be used so that people understand? Your second question is how to apply it to life. I get it through my portals of my senses. And that was through biodynamic cranial sacral meditations and the work that I did with embodiment skills. Then once I could get a feeling tone of when I first had this experience or what this feels like, then it started making sense in my adult life.
Through
my embodiment experiences and senses. You know, when did I feel agitated? When did I feel like I was falling apart? What does it feel like to be in your midline? To find to be in your heart, where you're not always looking at things through the brain, through the thinking, putting your eyes behind your heart kind of thing.
So I would suggest you give a script of the meditation guide or some kind of audience, because I want to know, like, is there any order, like if we do meditation, should we go from outside to inside or from inside to outside, or is there any order? It's okay.
Yes. Think of it as entering a labyrinth. When you sit in your meditation and you sit down, you've got an outside and an inside going on. Outside, inside. The farther you get onto your inside process, the more it seems unified, like it's okay, whatever, it doesn't matter, outside, inside, you're in the process. You can settle into actually what Michael Shea calls cardioception. Feel your heart pulsing. Quiet yourself down. All that's going to be responding to your parasympathetic, sympathetic, the warbling that Kate talks about. Get into your heart. Once you've got a really good settled place, that's embodiment. You can feel it. You're inside yourself. When you come back out of the meditation, bring that feeling with you as a resource and a touchstone for when you're out there and things aren't feeling real great. Does that help?
Yes, this is really awesome.
Oh, good.
Thank you. I think this would be really good tool for me. I would like to try if you have some like script or something like that.
Thank you.
Well, I just want to point out, of course, you can also look at the a PowerPoint of the presentation, right, Sheila?
Yeah, and
It'll be online under the Monday Live 4 series, Joy. So you can also look at the words, because I know sometimes the words associated with the stages they're big words. I mean, they're confusing concepts too.
How I do this with people is I will listen to them, and this way my mind has been informed with pre and perinatal or in my spiritual direction, I'll sink down and I listen. And if I get an intuition of something that may be something to explore or tug at or hold on to, I'll say, you might want to be curious about such and such, or what does it feel like now? Or I might say, this is beyond my scope. You need to go talk with a pre and perinatal psychology therapist. But I'd love to work with anybody. Just contact me and I can work with you.
Susan, did you want to say something?
Yes. Could you give us your contact information, please? I was just looking in my file and I don't seem to have an email. Yes, I'd love to maybe just explain, share some co-creative ideas, because I'd love to encourage you.
Oh, thank you.
Susan, the website, Sheila's website is on the reminder, and it's on the reminder at the bottom of her description. So that's a quick way to find it. But we discovered it might have if you copy and paste it, it might have a space at the beginning. So just be sure that the www doesn't have a space at the beginning if you paste it into your search mechanism.
And Sheila, I would, and Susan, I would love to be a part of that discussion. I feel the three of us have some co-creation to do around this, and we will see how we can integrate some of these pieces as a tool. I do feel that it has a power in it that is necessary to come as a, it needs to be available. Mm-hmm. And we will see how that can unfold. So let's follow this up with a conversation to follow. And it's just beautiful. And I think you got some reflection also that the work needs to continue. Please develop some guided meditations, it sounds like, or some kind of script. And the spirals and the actual pieces that you're cutting, I think those are things that people are also interested in having. So that will be something that we can all follow up with Sheila afterwards to see how we might be able to explore that personally and professionally.
One path that this labyrinth has taken me on is into the business world, and special needs child, and I'm mother at 72 here, you know, trying to take this child out into the world. So I'm just now getting to the point where writing a business plan and figuring out how much they should cost and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's coming. I just haven't gotten that far on the path yet.
So we had a question, yes, about, so are the spirals or pieces available for sale? And can we just keep watching your website?
Yes.
To know that?
When they're ready, and it will be like next month, I should know, I can put it a note out or communicate with people on the call. Or I don't know how to do that, but
you're hooked in, man. We'll help you out with that.
Okay, great.
We'll help you send notice of that.
Okay.
Anybody else just for one last question? No? And I had put a note that if any of you students have questions about the classroom, we can stay on after, but we can end this call and end the recording if everybody feels complete. Anyone else? It's great to see you all.
Thank you
so much, Sheila. That was just fabulous to hear. And good to see you all. And we're not going to meet on Labor Day, which is an American holiday, but we will be back September 9th. I see, Nina, you're riding us out. So
thank you, everybody, for holding my hand on this journey.
Yeah. So bye, unless you have a question about the classroom. I'm not going to close the meeting just yet. No. Bye, Sheila. Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Wonderful.